Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Worldwide Hoops podcast with me, Kurt Aquilina. For those who listened in last time, thank you for being here again. If this is your first time here, be sure to listen to the first episode with American forward Hannah Johnson on this very platform. Now, for today's show, I had the opportunity to have a chat about the Australian NBL with none other than the first Illawarra Hawks head coach, Joe Farrugia, who's been there from the start. Of course, I'm very excited to let you in on the conversation. So let's get right in. Hi, Joe. First of all, welcome to the show and thank you for being with us today. I was going to go ahead and ask immediately about your coaching career. You've been coaching for quite some time now. Obviously, you're retired now, but speaking about a coaching career like yours, we'll have a significant amount of experience involved in this. So I just wanted to jump in into getting to know more about you. Now, originally, you're coming from Malta, but you moved to Australia and you took the job with the Illawarra Hawks in 1979, which was incidentally also the year which they started. And fun fact about them is that they're the only team which still remains from the original ones. So first of all, how did that come about?
Well, if we go back to myself, my start, I started coaching basketball back in Malta, and I was at St. Michael's College, so I was sort of player coach there. Then, and we did quite well. We won a couple of championships, one of them undefeated. But after that, I moved to Australia in 1974. And my first job in Australia was in Melbourne, coaching a team called Manawatting Demons, which has now developed over many years. The Melbourne East organization are now playing again under Melbourne Phoenix. And they use the symbol of the Phoenix, you know, risen out of the ashes, and they're doing quite well. Then in 1976-77, I moved to New South Wales with my wife. We still haven't any children yet. And my wife's Maltese, by the way. She's Maria Briguglio, the famous referee, and Tony Briguglio and Lino Briguglio, they sort of call it. She's their sister. We moved to Wollongong, and I got a job there as coach with juniors. I coached the women's team, and I was assistant coach to Dr. Adrian Hurley, who eventually was the national coach after Lindsay Gales here in Australia. So I coached with him in the state championship in 1979. The National League started. And I remember that very, very well, because the idea of the National League, one of the main people to push it was Dr. John Reske. I knew him from some administration work I did for New South Wales Basketball. Mm-hmm. And a very original meeting, they established the National League. Their meeting was 1978, and the Hawks were in it amongst other, you know, 10 other teams, or 9 other teams. We were 10 teams that first year, and I was appointed head coach. Adrian Hurley sort of had his eye on other things at that particular time, so he said, "Joe, you coach the team." They're quite happy to let me start the ball rolling, if you like, as a coach, head coach. Our very first game at the what we call the snake pit here, because of the environment and the way the supporters get onto the opposition, was against St Kilda, who were Australian club champions at the time. The Australian club championships is what was the peak competition, if you like, for Australian men and women before the National League. Each state had its state competition, like New South Wales Championships. And then the clubs from each state got together once a year, and they played for the Australian Club Champion title. I coached in that with Nanawading Demons. We came mate in Australia at that time. Then the National League started, so that competition wasn't held anymore, the Australian Club Championship. We had the National League. And with the Illawarra Hawks, the very first year, as I said, the first game we played in the Snake Pit, it was a narrow victory for us over St Kilda, which was quite an achievement, because we were a regional team in New South Wales, but quite strong. We were the best team in New South Wales, state champions 3 years in a row. And then that's how the ball started rolling with the National League for us, the Hawks.
All right, and now we all know how big the NBL is nowadays, but back then, how was the basketball scene?
Well, the basketball scene, the basketball scene at that time was very much what you'd call part amateur. We had players who were amateurs. As coaches, we couldn't really live on that sort of stipend that you get, so we were part-timers, if you like, except for the imports. The American players were full-timers, but we made other arrangements. Like I was a trained teacher, but my original arrangement with the Hawks was to be a stadium manager. That was my way of earning an income while I was coaching. But eventually I got back into teaching, because being a part-time team, the training was nearly always in the afternoons and evenings. Teaching sort of gave me that opportunity. And I just ran individual programs for the American imports and some professional players that we had, and they just did all their gym work, shooting and individual work. I had an assistant coach who could help in that, but that's how things were. They were the beginnings, very different from what it is now, as far as the level of income for players and coaches.
Now, you've mentioned the American imports and the professional players, and I wanted to delve into that later. But before that, I was curious that you've been coaching for quite some time. But what would you say would be the highlights of your career, especially with the Hawks?
Well, with the Hawks, I had quite a few what I call highlights. First of all, as I said, the very first game against St Kilda, that's something that we won. Nobody expected us to do extremely well, but we did. We beat them the first game. That was one highlight. But that year, not in the National League, but we beat Newcastle, who were a very formidable team at that time, in Newcastle in the state championships, which were still being held for the state, and we beat them in their own court in a full stadium. So I remember it very, very, very well. Still got the medal for that, and that was 3 years in a row that we had won it. But two matches that I really hold dear, probably, is one was against Cibona in 1979. Now, Cibona were coached by Mirko Novozel. Now, Mirko Novozel, anyone who would like to sort of look him up, he is in the Naismith Hall of Fame as a coach. He's European Hall of Fame. And as it happened, by pure coincidence or luck, Mirko and myself, we met in 1971 in Mechelen in Switzerland. We did the 2-year FIBA coaching course together, and we met there. We became acquaintances once, friends. But he had this aura about him, this vibe, and people respected him. He ended up being one of the best coaches in Europe, but he brought his team to Australia, Cibona, and we played each other. I coached the Hawks. He coached Cibona in 79, and they beat us, not by much, but for us being part-timers and there being one of the strongest teams in Europe, I thought it was a great achievement. And then two years later, when I coached in 1981, the European champions came to Australia to tour. And they so the team was Zagreb, and they had just won the European Championship, so they came in the stadium, and the team they had just won they were Yugoslav champions and won the European Korac Cup in 1978 and 79, and we beat them at home, and the result was quite good, 102-92 in our favor. And that was personally the highest achievement, I think. Their name is Partizan Belgrade. Sorry about that. It's just the gray cells don't work as well as they used to. Partizan Belgrade. And Michael Jones, who that year was the most valuable player in the National Basketball League, one of my American players, he played in an outstanding manner. And so did Benny Lewis, another American that was in our team. But a personal satisfaction, I think, is the fact that I had an 18-year-old kid there. His name is Tim Morrissey, who I started off in the junior ranks and helped along. And I played him quite a bit because we needed his contribution. He eventually became one of the best players in the National League, and he went to Sydney. They always had a bit more money than us, and eventually became one of their star players, and his uniform is hanging at the stadium whenever the Kings play. Those would be the highlights as far as my personal coaching, if you like.
And now, more than 40 years later, naturally, your career has come to an end, and you're retired. And from our past discussions, you've also taken up golf, which is something interesting as well. But sticking to the Hawks, how important has the team remained for you? And do you still hold any particular role within it?
Well, no, I don't have any particular role. I'm an enthusiastic spectator, but I'm on good terms with the present administration anyway. I have a lot of respect for Dori Cordai, who is the owner, and we do get interact on a regular basis. Most of all, I think I have a lot of respect for the coach that Dori, who is one of the owners, has recruited. And the coach is Brian Gourgian, who has coached 750 NBL games, just our last Fox match, which they won. He's a legend. He spent 10 years he won five NBL championships here in Australia, and he spent 10 years in China, and he was recruited back this season to come back in the NBL and coach the Hawks. We've had a lot of very good coaches in the Hawks. I take satisfaction with the coach that actually won the championships. The Hawks only won the championship once, which was 2001, and the thing is hanging on the wall. And the coach was Brendan Joyce. Now, with Brendan Joyce, I told you before, I coached down in Melbourne, and he was one of the juniors at Manawatting Demon. We had a good rapport, and I remember being invited and being present when they won the last game, and he signed a t-shirt that's close to my heart, which is this: sort of best wishes to you, Joe, number one original Hawks coach, Brendan Joyce. That's one of my mementos that I have. Another junior that I've coached, and I coached him here in Illawarra from 1970, when I first came here, 76, all the way to 1981. Is Gordon McLeod. He's a legend here in Illawarra. He's one of the juniors that came through what they call a police boys club here. But I first interacted with him and worked with him as a coach, and, you know, improving his technique, his knowledge of the game, because he was only about 18, 19 when I first got to know him. And I'm sure watching him coach over the years, because he went and had a brilliant career. I'm being boastful here, but he's picked up quite a lot from my coaching, because I used to like to apply what I call combination defense. One of my trademarks was, putting two players man to man and have a triangle, or what we call boxing one in basketball, combination defenses. And also, as soon as the other coach takes a time out to adjust, we go back to a man-to-man tag, and I change again, and we had a code, we would change. We used a lot of those things, basically. So our teams, we're nearly always with the Hawks, were when I was coaching, not a strong player-by-player with either team, so we have to use these sorts of devices, besides playing very hard individual defense, taking care of the ball in offense. We had to come up with some sort of ploys, and sometimes they worked. As I said, when we played Partizan Belgrade, it did work, and although they were experienced, and their coach was also an experienced person, if you do use these tactics, not all the time, because they don't fizzle out, but at crucial times of the game, we know what we're going to do. It used to pay dividends most of the time, not always. Gordon McLeod is a player that, and we are still in contact. He's retired now and lives in Cairns in Queensland, but we're in contact regularly.
Right, and now something which came up in my research recently is something that you definitely know about, considering you've been there from the start. It's the recent issue which saw the club need to drop the Illawarra name for a while before eventually getting it back, so to speak.
Yeah.
What do you think about all this? I mean, what effect
did that have? I think I sent you a link about that, because I had an interview on the ABC radio with Nick Reinberger about that. And actually, if you Google up Joe Perugia Hawks, it will come up. My thoughts were simply that the Hawks had been struggling financially for quite a while. And I knew that firsthand, knowing coaches, knowing some people who were in the mix of the organization. And the reason they were not performing well financially was that I think that deep down, the local community loves them, but I don't think they really were backing them financially as well as they could. And we don't have a huge stadium, so 4,500 is our spectator, practically filling this, not filling, but that's our capacity. And that was not enough. So basically they went bust for the third time, or in administration for the third time. The situation was that either you lose the team and that's it, and the franchise goes to some other, the license goes to some other organization, or nothing. Or survive in a different format. And the NBL decided to keep the name of the Hawks and try to increase the footprint. The business idea, the business model was they'd have a bigger footprint, not just the Illawarra, which is a regional area. No, it's quite large, but it's a regional area. But they were thinking of having Canberra come into it. Well, they're hoping, and maybe parts of southern Sydney, so a bigger footprint, and you're going to draw in, hopefully, not so much the supporters. People are not going to travel, you know, 2-3 hours necessary, but at least they can get more support and hopefully more finances. It didn't really work out. One was COVID, sort of gave it a bit of a death blow. Canberra Stadium, they had issues with that. I mean, there is the Institute of Sport in Canberra, but they had issues with that, and I think that option fizzled out. at the same time, obviously, the local people here, including myself, many, you know, we're very sentimental. We were the Illawarra Hawks. Illawarra is the only First Nations word in the league. It means the pleasant place by the sea, right? Illawarra. And it's the only word that has gotten, and the league has got a policy about First Nations. So I thought that's a little bit, and I did send messages, mail, whatever, talk to people, and I made that point. And some people reckon, well, yeah, that's probably the best argument to put the word Illawarra back. But eventually, the push from a lot of the supporters, from the newspaper, the media, the politicians, I think they held sway, but more than that, the fact that the footprint really did not grow so much. We also have some very good ownership now, and what I call authentic, legitimate ownership. In the past, we've had various ownerships, but I think the shackles or the money that is or was not, or their pockets were not deep enough. And I have friends who are players, coaches, who are still owed money by previous organizations. Often the NBL had to go in and pay. I mentioned Gordon McLeod last, you know, I talked to him. He says, oh, they still owe me this, they still owe me that. And I was three coaches ago. The coach who's a very good friend of mine, Rob Beveridge, that's two coaches before this one. He was owed money left, right, and center, and he made sacrifices and helped them. But if they're professionals, they need to get paid. And when that happens, then the morale goes down. It doesn't mean. But now we're in a different phase. I do believe that this administration and the coach we have and the players that are young and developing together with a good import core, I think they'll do very well. In fact, they have started extremely well last year. We only won 5 matches this year. We are in the top 4, and we started the season with 4 wins.
Yeah, and in fact, I wanted to look into this because looking at the current Hawks, the Hawks are currently one of the playoff squads with a positive record this season. And what do you see the team achieving this year?
Well, to be honest, I would. Well, I sincerely believe that they'll make the finals. Let's put it that way. Definitely make the finals. They have the potential, definitely the coaching ability, and we do have the potential to win the whole thing. But it's a very, very hard league. If you look at the ladder, you know, between the first team and say the 7th or 8th team, there's only 2-3 wins at most. Melbourne United had gone undefeated for quite a while. Suddenly they dropped 3 games. It's one of the toughest leagues in the world as far as being competitive. The bottom team can beat the top team at any time. So it is going to be very, very difficult. But I would suggest, in fact, I believe, I commit myself to this, that they will make the finals. Beyond that, a lot of luck and things have to fall in place at the right time. But which is a great achievement anyway. I don't think Brian Goorjian is expecting to win. He's trying, he'd want to, but he's not expecting to win. In the first season, his idea is to build a team, which is what he's done in the past.
Yeah, in fact, now that you mention it, I remember something that I've read recently also about the NBL, where previous legends have described the NBL as possibly the second best league in the world behind the American one, the NBA. So I guess what you mentioned about it being very hard is pretty justified in this case. Now, something also related to the American League and something you mentioned before is the amount of American imports, not only in the NBL, I mean, they're flying all over the world. And first of all, what do you think of the level that these players bring to this kind of league?
Well, as you said, we have very high standard league. In fact, we have most of our American players have had MBA experience that come in, but just because they've had that, they don't come in and suddenly perform. We've got Australian players that are playing in the NBA, quite a few. We've got a couple who have just returned. We've got players who are playing in Europe. One of the players that played with us is playing in Spain now, and he will eventually come back. But the standard is very, very high already. The Australian player standard is extremely high. So when an American comes in, the superstars are not going to let them go in the NBA. So when you're what I'd call an average NBA player, or maybe one that's obviously is not playing in the NBA, so they're letting him go, their level is very good. But we've got Australian players born and bred here, gone through the Australian Institute of Sport or some junior program in our clubs, that are at the same level, if not higher. In fact, quite a few come, they just can't fit in, and then they have to go. But we also have, talk about the NBA, we have a system which started last year, which is like next, they're called the Next Star. One of them was LaMelo Ball, who played last year for the Hawks. And the idea is to get American players who are not yet ready to play in the NBA. Usually they're young. And therefore, they rather than play in the G League, and they can go and play in the G Leagues in America, but they have this career path, if you like, and they come here in Australia. So we've got a few of them here. Now, LaMelo Ball made it. He was one of the first, I think, in the draft number two or number three. He went, what number was he?
Three,
number three. And he made it over there. Personally, I think it's a great idea, and I'm quoting Coach Gurjian here, but I would say exactly the same thing. LaMelo Ball was great for the NBL, not so good for the Hawks. I think the earthquake scene that we had last season when he was here, I think some of it, people would want to crucify me here, but I believe some of it is on his shoulder. And I really feel for Coach Matty Flynn, that was the coach then. I mean, Matty Flynn is going to go through the rest of his life saying, yeah, I coached LaMelo Ball, and look where he's at. But by the same token, the money, the fact that LaMelo had his manager here, he had his father around, and it's very, very difficult. And I do also believe that LaMelo Ball stage managed most of his appearances for the Hawks. In other words, at some stages he had an ankle injury, right? So he's not playing. So when you look at the stats, he played what was necessary to keep him in the limelight for his ultimate aim, which is to make the draft. Yeah. And I do believe, as an Illawarra Hawks supporter from 1979, that we were used in that manner. Like, it was good for him. He was good for exposure. We got our name all over, but he got what he wanted, and we went bust. And Coach Flynn, he's not there anymore. New ownership now, so we're moving forward. Having said that, we've got Justinian Jessup, which is sort of the same idea. But Justinian Jessup is just one of the troops. He's not our prima donna, if you like. That's me saying it, Joe Perugia's opinion. But I think LaMelo Ball was about LaMelo Ball. Wasn't about the Hawks. And we had a bit of a, what I'd call a charade, when the ownership tenders were out for the new owners of Illawarra Hawks last year. LaMelo Ball let out in the media, in American media, you could say that he and some others had got the ownership of the Hawks, and doing this for the Hawks. I think his conscience might have pricked him a little bit, but anyway, and it was not true. when I challenged some people here, they said, oh, it wasn't him, it was his manager. Hello, a guy who's a multimillionaire playing basketball, that's his career. I'm sure the manager would not speak without his knowledge, at least not the right sense. But that was a bit of a charade. And in fact, there was a local owner and LaMelo Ball, and they did try to put an application or a bid for the Hawks, but they lost it, and I would suggest that farce acted very much against them. The ownership that got it, Cordae and Dory Cordae and his group, they are what I call authentic. They're serious. They've had the experience. Their first move was to get Brian Gorgie in, the best ever in performance, highest number of games coached in the NBL. That was, if you like, an ace straight away. And then the players he recruited, there's absolute trust between him, that's Brian, and the ownership. They trust each other 100%, which is what a coach needs. Before, in previous years, maybe that trust was not always there. I know that for a fact. I do converse with previous coaches.
Now, you've mentioned LaMelo Ball, and I think it was inevitable when discussing the Hawks that his name would come up. And you seem to have a lot of praise for him in his game. Now, something interesting in his journey is that, he's been criticized both in Lithuania and both after his experience in Australia for disappearing, so to speak, after only a few games. I mean, in the NBL with the Hawks, he only played 12 games because of his injury eventually. However, he did make NBL history during those 12 games because he was the youngest player to get a triple-double during his games. And now, I mean, obviously he's settled down because he's reached where he was planning in his journey. He's in the NBA now, he's playing with Charlotte, but he's doing the same thing. And in the race for the Rookie of the Year, he's you can say on top at the moment.
What effect
do you think these players have?
Sorry?
What effect do you think these players have on the game?
Well, I think he's an awesome player. He's an awesome talent. He's got vision. His ball control is phenomenal. I'm not so sure about his jump shot. If he on the 3-pointers, unlike his brother has got sort of a semi-set jump shot. But he's effective and got a good percentage. LaMelo can be very erratic. But the other side of things are very good. I'm not so sure or convinced about his defense. He's very good at steals. He's very good at anticipating a pass. He's very good like that. But a hard-nosed one-on-one defense, although, you know, it's not always played in the NBA, he leaves a bit to be desired. But as far as his skills, as far as his assists, the passes that in crucial times, even rebounding for his size, he's phenomenal, and I think he'll do very, very well, hopefully long term. As far as the effect here, if you're talking about the NBL, I'll say again, he was good for the image of basketball, still is. They got a movie out about the next stars. He's in it, and some current ones. So he's good there. He put our name, you know, our Hawks name, you know, on the basketball scene worldwide. That was awesome. But as far as what happened at that time with the team and with the, I mean, the results speak for themselves. We came last and we won 5 games. So, you know, when you have a superstar of that quality and you win, and the coach is very good, people sort of might say something about Matthew Flynn. He's been there for a long time. He was assisting other coaches. He's been an Illawarra stalwart for a long time. So he's good, but unfortunately, he suffered consequences of the turmoil, as I said before. I think as a spectacle, okay, but I believe basketball is a team game, and individuals win acclamation and awards, but it's a team, a well-gelled team, the disciplined team. Might not even have all the best stars in the world, but if you've got a good team, and especially if you have got solid rebounders, that's probably one of the main winning factors, then you've got a potential championship team. An outstanding individual or two, they won't win you a championship.
No, it's very interesting that you mentioned this, because most European sides or non-American sides philosophize in this way, while in America it's mostly about those stars. So it's quite interesting how different the games are. And this brings me to something more international now, to close off this interview, because I wanted to get your take on this summer's Olympics now, the ones in Tokyo. I mean, first of all, in the World Cup in 2019, the Australia team, despite not being with most of its stars for the tournament, they made fourth place anyway. And this summer, you've got Ben Simmons, who's been confirmed. Aaron Baines, Joe Ingles, all the lot have been confirmed for the Boomers this year. And so one would expect an even better result in the Tokyo Games. What do you see them doing this year, not this time around? How do you see them going?
Well, as you know, the Australian coach is our coach, Brian Gourgian. He's got the job. Brett Brown was the coach for the Sixers, but when he lost his job with the Sixers, sort of he also said, look, I'm not in the frame of mind, I suppose, to coach the Boomers. So after applications, our coach Brian Gourgian got the gig. Knowing Brian, he's already said it publicly, he's not going to muck around. He's going to go after gold in a competition like that. Also, because of the way he plays the game and the way he believes, you know, his philosophy, he wants contributions from everybody, and he's got a good pool of talent. Obviously, Ben Simmons and all the other NBA players and players playing in Europe, mentioned before, one guy who was with the Hawks, Tim Kay, he's playing in Spain. He's also very good now. He's getting the experience. The sad thing about the Boomers, the men, they've always been close, if you like, or you know, fourth is the closest, but they always had hopes. Never won a medal, not even in the Olympics, not even a bronze medal. The women in Australia, women have won gold, they have won silver, they have won world championship. They've always performed better than the men. I have a huge respect for the Australian women's talent in basketball. There's the Women's National Basketball League, which is also very, very high standard. And I find it quite intriguing, because women's basketball in Australia, they've got a lot of competition from that, gee, I'm going to say it, but it's a silly game called netball. You can, you know, netball, if people look into the history where it started in England and in the Commonwealth, it was sort of like a corruption of a colonial invention, which was basketball by Dr. James Naismith. And they adopted the rules, obviously. When people started playing basketball, they would have been not experienced, and I'd say it's like chickens chasing the feet on top of each other. So they came up with these rules, like, okay, you are goal attack, you're goal shooter, you're goal defense. So they actually drew areas. In response, you draw area where you stay there. And then netball developed. Once it becomes part of the culture, and in Australia, netball became part of the culture. It's a big sport. It's a huge sport. You get more watching netball finals and things than you get in basketball sometimes. So the women's basketball players had to compete with this at the, obviously at the school level and then at the elite level. And yet they are one of the best women's teams in the world. We had Lauren Jackson, who played in the women's NBA in America. She is now head of the women's sport for basketball Australia. She was a legend. She played well. She played in Europe. Played there. So they've done well, and they have won medals. The men are still trying. I'm hoping that. They break the ice now, and that Gurjin would be the first coach to get a medal for the Australian Boomers team. But again, like I said, with the NBL, there are many, many, many good. You look at Greece with Antetokounmpo. Okay, he's one, but as you said, they would have a good, solid team around him. Yeah. They're not going to just say, okay, play like in the NBA, here's the ball, go for it. The same with Spain, Turkey, Germany. There's a lot of very, very strong competition with players that do play in the NBA. So it's not going to be that easy, but Brian Gurjin, he likes a challenge, and I do believe he's up to it. The players respect him. He always manages. I'm quoting here Lindsay Gaze. Lindsay Gaze and I are good friends. We communicate. I just got an email day before yesterday regularly. He's getting on, but he says and quotes, so I'm quoting him, that Brian Gurjin is a member of his extended family, right? Now, Lindsay was Brian Gurjian's coach when Brian came over to Australia. He used to play when I coached down in Melbourne. Brian used to play for Lindsay with the Melbourne Tigers. And he says to me, and this is the pertinent quote, I suppose, that Gurjian has got the ability to get his players to do their best most times, most games. And they do play very hard for him. So he's got that knack. And if he can get the best out of the talent we have, we are going to be competitive, and I think there is a chance that we'll win a medal. So probably best chance we've had so far.
And speaking of this, something also interesting considering the national teams. Something I've realized is taking into consideration, for example, the American team for the World Cup, their selection was limited as well, similar to the Australian team. However, this time around, when it comes to the Olympics, both the Australian team and also the American team, they're fielding a very impressive lineup now. Do you think it matters more that they're taking part in the Olympics rather than the World Cup? Does it make a difference for you?
Yes, it does. The Olympics have always had more status than the World Cup, always did. Particularly with the Americans. In Australia, I think we've always tried to send the best team available to any international competition. But the Americans always cut the Olympics as more important, if you like, than the World Championships always did. Sort of FIBA would have been a little bit annoyed about things, but that is the case. Historically, if you look at it, like you say, the teams they sent, and I think they used to assume that they can't get beat anyway, but they did. even South America now, we're talking about Brazil, Argentina, these teams are pretty strong. But the Olympics are, if you like, the flag bearing for any sport, really. And in basketball, if you say you won a gold medal in the Olympics, you've done very, very well. That's the status of it.
No, this was great stuff, Joe. And I've definitely learned a lot from you today, and I'm sure our audience has as well. So I'd like to thank you for this, especially for taking the time out of your day to have this conversation with me. To be honest, hopefully we'll get this opportunity again to discuss the Hawks and the NBL and basically basketball in general, because I'm sure it's a huge part of many people's lives, such as ours. So once again, thank you for this. And as I said, hopefully we get to do this again.
Oh, I'd look forward to that. There's a lot more. I'm in my study at the moment, and I got boxes around it. But yeah, no worries, man. It was a pleasure. I'm enjoying it. So.
Okay, guys, so that was it for today. I hope you guys enjoyed this, and thank you for spending time with us today. Obviously, feel free to follow for more of this and other Worldwide Hoops podcasts in the coming weeks, where I'll be having some very exciting guests with me here on the show. But until then, I'd like to thank you once again, and see you next time.